accumulating to a total of more than $4 trillion since 2013. China's Belt and Road Initiative have jump-started development of many underdeveloped economies in Africa and other regions across the globe. According to the Nigerian government, Chinese investment in railroad construction, mining and industries created industrial vertical integration in the country, creating new industries and employment opportunities, taking the country to a higher and wealthier level of development. In terms of human capital, India's large and relatively young population, 26.6% between the ages of 0 and 14 and 67% in the range 15 to 64 age group, could afford it a demographic dividend. With sufficient investment in education and training, India could acquire a skilled labour pool to attract domestic and foreign investments. It was China's huge investment in education that enabled it to produce millions of university graduates in the STEM, science, technology, engineering and mathematics fields. This helped China leapfrog technological advancement or innovation, replacing workers with robots, thus addressing the labour shortage. Raising the retirement age from the present 55 years of age for women and 60 for men to 65 years or older could enhance productivity because of their experiences. China could do that because its population is getting healthier and living longer. Added benefits of raising the retirement age would be increased household income and reducing the government and families' financial burden of looking after retirees. Last but not least, BRICS's large population, estimated about 40% of the world's total, generates enormous economies of scale, thus improving competitiveness. Add the billions more people in the other 140 BRICS participating countries, the BRICS economies could sustain stable growth even without input from the West and Japan. According to China's Ministry of Commerce, accumulated two-way trade between China and the Belt and Road Initiative participating countries exceeded $9 trillion in 2020. That number would likely grow because more countries and organizations are showing interest in joining the Belt and Road Initiative. Technologically, the BRICS is not that far behind the G7 because China, Russia and India are technology powers. China might in fact have surpassed the G7 in artificial intelligence, fifth-generation telephony, and quantum computing, just to name a few of its achievements. India produces some of the best and brightest technology minds in the world, and there is no question that Russia is equal to any G7 nation in terms of military and space technologies. So yes, BRICS has the wherewithal to recover from the pandemic and economic woes and to become a beacon for the global economy. On the other hand, the G7, the United States, the United Kingdom, Germany, Japan, France, Canada and Italy is a has-been millionaires club whose members refuse to believe they are broke. In attempting to recover from the COVID-induced recession, the economy simply printed money or increased the national debt. However, increasing the money supply and national debt leads to inflation and dampens fiscal and monetary policy effectiveness in the G7 countries. Printing too much money, too, will dilute the value and importance of the greenback, putting America's and the global financial system at risk. This will only destabilize the United States and global financial systems, but also cause currency and trade wars. Lack of financial or economic muscle is the major reason the G7 annual summits have remained little more than photo opportunities, its leaders singing the same old song and making empty promises. Created back in 1975 to address the world's economic woes, the club has held annual summits on how to address issues such as oil crises and promising to help developing nations deal with their economic woes. But guess what? the developing nations are still waiting, and global economic issues remain problematic. The 2021 pledge of establishing an alternative to China's Belt and Road Initiative to build infrastructure in poor or developing nations too would likely be all talk. The G7 countries, the United States in particular, are struggling, if not failing, to reverse rising poverty and rebuilding crumbling infrastructure at home for lack of funds. So where are the trillions of dollars that the G7 promised to spend on the Build Back Better for the World, or B3W proposal? The world can be forgiven for being skeptical about the promises made by the United States and its allies. For example, even former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's modest proposal for creating a $113 million fund to counter the Belt and Road Initiative was an empty promise. The same fate happened to later proposals. Lack of financial and economic muscle and determination to purportedly contain China might be the reason the G7 invited India, Australia, South Korea and South Africa to the 2021 meeting in the United Kingdom, hoping to turn it into G11. Adding South Korea to the quadrilateral security dialogue would strengthen its geopolitical position to counter China in the Asia-Pacific region. The G7 probably hopes that playing South Africa away from China would erode the latter's influence in the African continent. However, the G7 may have a problem recruiting those four countries into the alliance, particularly when it is intended to counter China. South Africa is not only a member of BRICS, but also relies heavily on China for investment and trade. South Korea is crossing its fingers that the United States will not pressure it into joining the G7 for security as well as economic reasons. The COVID-19 pandemic has laid bare how India needs Chinese investment, trade and healthcare equipment. Australia has shown signs that it wants to improve trade relations with China. Furthermore, joining the G7 to counter China would not only risk the invitees' economic interests, but could worsen their security positions. As the 19th century British statesman Lord Palmerston observed, countries have no permanent friends or foes, only national interests. Joining the G7 is definitely not in the invitees' national interests. Ongoing BRICS meetings present a golden opportunity for the leaders of the club to talk cooperation, instituting trade, investment, health, security and technology agreements to achieve their nation's economic and geopolitical potentials.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah. Today's great tip, taking ourselves into account, a door towards the secrets of Ubudiyyah, the secrets of the worship of Allah, in the words of Allah. Now, dear listeners, we're talking about a very interesting subject today on the program, and that is that we need to take ourselves into account, meaning we need to reflect and contemplate upon what we did in the past and what we are doing in the present, whether it is good or bad, whether it is on the side of truth and justice, or it is on the side of batil, falsehood. And we need to, of course, weigh our actions, take ourselves into account. This taking of ourselves into account is one of the things which is known as muhasiba in these circles of Islamic spirituality, also known as irfan. And so in this science of irfan, and one of the practical things that is taught by the Ahlul Ma'rifah, the people of knowledge, the people of wisdom, righteous religious scholars, they teach us that we should take ourselves into account. And of course, the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, the divinely appointed imams, they point towards this idea that one should take yourself into account before you are taken account of. Of course, what they're talking about is it is better for us to take ourselves into account in this life before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the mighty, the exalted, takes us into account on the day of judgment. Of course, a very important thing that we must do, taking ourselves into account. Because this taking ourselves into account, dear friends, is in reality a door towards the secrets of ubudiyyah, the secrets of the servitude of Allah. In the next segments, we're going to talk about some verses of the Holy Quran, the words of Allah, which tell us to take ourselves into account. And of course, when we take ourselves into account, we will be able to enjoy and enhance and really feel the satisfaction and pleasure of the servitude and worship and ubudiyyah of Allah. Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Sometimes the environment also plays a major role in the shedding of the tears. In which way? We are told, for example, that if you are in a masjid, yes, if you are in a place of worship, if you are in sajda, for example, if you are in a holy place, a mausoleum like the holy Kaaba or the shrines of the Masumeen, peace be upon them, all this potentiates the ability to cry and to shed the tears. Likewise, the remembrance of death. I tell you, once here in the United States, rather, I was finishing a majlis and one young brother, 17, 18 year old, came to me and said, "You know, I have a problem." I said, "What's the problem?" He said, "You know, I cannot hold myself from the temptations. That when I go to school, there are people of the opposite gender, yes, and I fall into temptations. Teach me a way that I can say no to the desires." I said, "There is no magic pill. Don't expect, but work hard, but start off with the following." He said, "What should I do?" I said, "Go to your local Qabristan cemetery and find an empty grave and lie there for half an hour." So he went, he was lying there for half an hour, and I said to him, "Close your eyes and reflect. What would you do if it was too late? If in that actual act that displeases Allah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala decided to take your life, there is no return. Whatever you do, if you beg, قَالَ رَبِّ ارْجِعُونَ. The Quran says they beg, Ya Allah, return me back for a minute or two. Give me a chance. Everything in this life has a chance. You lose your business, you lose your health. Maybe you can get it back. But once you leave this world, there is no return. I said to him, think about it. He came to me after a few days and said, you know what? When I was lying there, I was shaking in fear. I could not lie there for half an hour, 5 minutes, and I stood out. I could not. I looked around me and I was petrified. And I thought to myself, what answers would I give to the angels? How would I face Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the day of judgment with my deeds, with my sins, with my transgressions? Yes. And that's why our fourth Imam beautifully in Dua Abu Hamza, he says, مَالِي لَا أَبْكِي وَأَرَى نَفْسِي تُخَادِعُنِي وَأَيَّامِي تُخَادِعُنِي. Imam alayhi salam says, how dare I not cry, and I see my days are being numbered. I'm getting closer to death. وَقَدْ خَفَقَتْ أَجْنِحَةُ الْمَوْتِ that عِنْدَ رَأْسِي أَجْنِحَةُ الْمَوْتِ. Death is approaching to me. I can feel it. The wings of death are right next to me. Don't tell me you're only 18 or 19. That death comes at any moment. Imam alayhi salam says, feel that it's as if it's coming to you. And then he says, مَالِي لَا أَبْكِي أَبْكِي لِظُلْمَةِ قَبْرِي أَبْكِي لِضِيقِ لَحْدِي أَبْكِي لِسُؤَالِ مُنْكَرٍ وَنَكِيرٍ إِيَّانِ. Should I not cry about any of these realizations that I'm by myself in the grave, that it's dark, that it's tight, that I have to answer to Munkar and Nakir? Should I not be crying by the realization that then when the cry is heard, I will be resurrected and I will be all alone? I will be carrying my deeds unclothed. No one is concerned about me. Everyone's concerned about their own well-being on the day of resurrection. Therefore, a powerful way to keep ourselves in that zone, or to be able to cry due to the fear or the awe, or be God conscious, is to indeed remember the ultimate journey of death, the universal law that no doubt applies to each and every human being.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were saying, which of course was taking ourselves into account, and how taking ourselves into account is a door towards the secrets of the worship and servitude of Allah, the ubudiyyah of Allah. Now, when we take ourselves into account, what happens is that the evil things that we have done, the bad things that we have done, the sins that we have committed, the errors we might have committed, the mistakes that we might have committed, these negative things, if we just call them in general, all of them together, these negative things are taken into account. Once we take these negative things into account, then we do our best to refrain from doing those things, and we analyze and we reflect and we contemplate and we figure out how to prevent ourselves from doing these things in the future. And likewise, we ask for forgiveness from Allah. Now, on the other hand, the good deeds that we have done, the noble and honorable and righteous things that we have done, the things that we have done that are satisfactory and acceptable when it comes to Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted. These things, we look at them and we reflect and we contemplate, and then we find ways to continue to do these good things. And at the same time, we thank Allah that Allah is the one who gave us the blessings to be able to do these good things. Now, when talking about the words of Allah, when it comes to taking ourselves into account, we find in Suratul Kahf, which is the chapter of the cave, chapter number 18, verse number 49. Again, chapter number 18, verse number 49, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and they shall find present what they have done. Allahu Akbar. In this verse, dear friends, how clearer can it be said? And in another verse of the Holy Quran, we have Surah Zilzal. This is chapter Zilzal, chapter number 99, verse number 7. Again, chapter number 99, verse number 7, where Allah says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, so he who has done an atom's weight of good shall see it. Allahu Akbar. Another clear verse of the Holy Quran telling us that accounting of ourselves will occur. So why not take ourselves into account, clear the ledger, and move towards Allah?
As-salamu alayka ya السلام عليك يا باب نجاة الأمة.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
السلام عليك يا أسير الكربات ويا قتيل العبرايات. أترجو أمتي قتلت حسينا شفاعة جده يوم الحساب. السلام على الخد التريب. السلام على
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The light.
A French beekeeper has invented a unique device to keep his beehives safe after suffering a traumatic loss of 35 of them to hungry Asian hornets. The device is a one-way mechanism that baits hornets with sugary water, and once they get in through a funnel, they never come out. Originally, the trap was made of wooden crates and metal mesh, but now they are 3D printed in plastic. Dennis made his first lobster pot to catch the hornets in 2016 and now makes the traps in bulk due to growing demand. The Asian hornets are an invasive insect that arrived in France via a pottery shipment from China. The killer hornet can eat through an entire hive in a matter of hours. There is a festive occasion for a Mexican zoo amid a rare birth boom in its lion enclosure. Keepers and visitors are amazed to hear roars of three newborn cubs. The three baby lions that are trying very hard to roar were born just 2 weeks ago in Zacango Zoo. And the zookeepers separate them from their mother for a few hours a day to feed them because their mother cannot produce milk. The two female and male cubs would live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. They are reported to be currently in good health.
A bunker built by the German army in France during World War II has now been given a new lease of life by turning it into an underground guest house. A 4,300 square feet bunker located off Breton coast in northern France was originally built by Nazi troops after invading the country in 1940. The area has been the home of hundreds of such fortifications of the German army. Half of them have been buried along sandy beaches. This underground guest house now belongs to the 52-year-old bunker enthusiast. Serge Gollio says it took 18 months to dig out the buried trench and turn it into a fully functional guest house. He says an attempt was made to preserve some historic aspects during its renovation.
What is nice is to now be able to spend time here, to have dinner, to spend the night and things like this. So we adapted the bunker while preserving a certain feel. We wanted to give the building a second life, so we are not going to live in the past forever. We saved some aspects, you know, where you are. There are historic cues, but this isn't a museum either.
Collio says many French visitors and foreigners, including Germans, have stayed in the guest house since the bunker opened a year ago. The world's highest expressway has opened to traffic in China's Tibet Autonomous Region. It's nearly 300 kilometers long and has an average elevation of 4,500 meters. It connects the cities of Nanchu and Lhasa, shortening the travel time from 6 to 3 hours. The road passes through many picturesque areas, such as snowy mountains, grasslands, and wetlands. The expressway is also environmentally friendly. Special passages have been devised for animals to get from one side of the freeway to the other. An architectural firm in Singapore has come up with a unique idea to deal with a country's constant warm temperatures. A hotel on the island's busy business district has been covered with more than 20 species of creeping plants to keep the place cooler. A layer of vegetation blankets the facade of the Red Tower, which is growing thicker with the passage of time. The plants reduce the ambient temperature by a combination of water evaporation and releasing cooler vapor. The architect says the tower is 10 to 20 degrees Celsius cooler than nearby buildings. The green facades also reduce harmful carbon emissions, which account for over 20% in a sprawling city.
youngest panda at the U.S.'s Smithsonian Zoo, National Zoo, that is, has turned one. Baby panda Xiao Qiji celebrates the milestone by eating a specially made fruitsicle cake with his mother, Mei Xiang, in Washington, D.C. Both pandas dug into their icy cake, an ideal treat in the hot and humid summers of the U.S. capital. Xiao has captured hearts and had many first-time experiences. Some of them include sliding and tumbling around in snow and recognizing his name, which translates to little miracle in English.
He was born during the pandemic, and given the age of his mother, we didn't think she'd have another cub. And the fact that we, not just that we had this miracle, but he has just been, he's given people moments of pure joy and pure happiness.
Xiao Qiji is the fourth surviving cub of Mei Xiang. Its older siblings now live in China under an agreement with the United States. Pandas have been reclassified from endangered to vulnerable thanks to reforestation to expand habitats in which the species can survive. There are an estimated 1,800 giant pandas in the wild.
The annual Buddha sculpture has been unveiled at the New York State Fair to the delight of eager spectators. The artwork was sponsored for the 53rd year by the American Dairy Association. It was carved out of 400 kilograms of butter and took 10 days to build. The sculpture is dedicated to the children who will be going back to their normal lives after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Once the fair ends, all of the butter will be broken down and turned into renewable energy. Switzerland is constructing its biggest alpine solar plant in an effort to secure renewable energy throughout the year. The 2.2 megawatt plant is expected to be completed by the end of 2021. The Mutzi site will include nearly 5,000 solar modules and produce around 3.3 million kilowatt hours of electricity. It will have the option of delivering half of its production during the winter when temperatures drop to sub-zero levels in Switzerland. The developers say the project makes more environmental than fiscal sense. Currently, the country gets less than 4% of its electricity from solar power.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An eatery in Japan is giving disabled people a new lease on life by including them in its workforce. Dawn Cafe uses robotic staff controlled remotely by people who are handicapped. Around 50 people with mental and physical disabilities help run the cafe. The pilots come from all over Japan as well as overseas. The venue was established with support from major companies and crowdfunding. It has become more than just a place to eat for its customers.
Customers here are not exactly coming to this location just to meet the Orihime robots. They come here because of the people behind Orihime, and they will come back to see them again.
For Kentaro, Dawn Cafe has a very personal touch. In his childhood, he was left unable to go to school due to a period of bad health. Now he aspires to come up with ways to further the inclusion of disabled people in society. Crowds of visitors and conservationists have been delighted by the birth of a rare orangutan in the Spanish town of Fuengirola. The new residents of the safari park made its first public appearance 2 weeks after its birth. The baby, yet to be named, is the only one to be born in a European zoo over the past 12 months. The park has launched a program to conserve Borneo orangutans that are considered as a critically endangered species. Their population has declined by more than 50% over the past century. Dozens of baby turtles have made their way to the sea after an unexpected overnight hatch in Italy. Italian volunteers were surprised by track marks of the hatchlings from an unknown nest in Sicily. Some of the eggs hatched in the morning. An environmental group following the turtles' movement said that 74 hatchlings made it to the sea, while five didn't. The reptiles are an endangered species of oceanic turtle that also live in the Mediterranean Sea. Their population has declined in recent years due to hunting, loss of beach nesting sites, over-harvesting of their eggs, and being caught in fishing gear.
A Slovenian enthusiast has discovered a new cave in the Alpine country, which is staggering visitors by its awe-inspiring looks. Ludwig Husu, a 63-year-old cave explorer, has come across a cavern that runs 60 meters deep in the ground. It's located in the country's karst region, an area of land made up of limestone. Some 14,000 caves are buried under the green forest of Slovenia, hiding away breathtaking stalactite and stalagmite formations. The limestone region is so pristine and uncharted that the European Space Agency has used the caves to train astronauts.
Astronauts also know that the karst world is exceptional, special in a similar way to how a space environment can be. It is an unknown environment where you do not know what to expect at your next step. They have been here to train for precisely that, how to help yourself in a dark area where you're not sure what's going on and everything is new. That's very good training for space, and they have been very pleased to be able to prepare for something they might find in space.
Over 150 species, some looking like alien creatures, have been discovered inside the cave systems. They include an ancient aquatic salamander called the little dragon that can live up to 100 years. The animal was previously considered living proof that dragons had once existed. Some cave systems in Slovenia stretch for tens of kilometers. They are so winding and deep that scientists say large parts of them remain undiscovered despite exploration efforts dating back hundreds of years. As the U.S. is experiencing its worst heat wave, Boston zookeepers are working extra hard to keep the animals cool to avoid overheating. Some get frozen treats, and some, like the yak, get a water hosing several times a day when the temperatures rise. The hardest part is cooling down animals belonging to cold climates, like the reindeer. Since reindeer don't like water, the hosing down is a big no. Instead, the poor animals sit in front of a desk fan all day to stay away from the heat. The birds have it a little easier as they spend most of their time in air-conditioned dens.
In Indonesia, a group of university lecturers have come up with an idea of building a robot to help people during the coronavirus pandemic. The robot is assembled from electric household items like pots and pans and an old television monitor. It was named Delta after the new coronavirus variant ripped through Indonesia. The robot was initially built to entertain residents of a village in the country's East Java province. But the head of the robot-making project says he decided to shift his function into assisting people dealing with a deadly virus.
With this new Delta variant and the surging number of COVID-19 cases, I decided to turn the robot used for public services into one that sprays disinfectant and delivers food and necessities of residents who are self-isolating. I'm shifting the function to serve only the members of the community who are in need.
The interesting thing about a robot is that it greets people when delivering things to isolated residents. The developers of the robot say it has been built in a joint project with local people and is by no means a high-tech device.
We don't know much about woolly mammoths that went extinct some 10,000 years ago, except there are scant references in archaeology books. Now scientists have discovered that a giant mammals could walk incredibly long distance. Scientists from the University of Alaska have concluded that a male mammoth named Kik covered enough ground in its 28-year lifespan to encircle the Earth twice. To come up with the data, paleontologists analyzed one of Kik's well-preserved tusks. They say the animal lived with a herd through its infancy and youth and then went on to live alone. Scientists hope they will learn more about mammoths by analyzing further data from Kik's remains.
Prehistoric cave paintings found in Spain prove that Neanderthals were the first artists on Earth. A new study says red markings discovered in three caves near Malaga did not occur naturally. They were made by Neanderthals nearly 65,000 years ago. That's when modern humans did not inhabit the continent yet. The findings suggest that the pigments were applied at different times, sometimes more than 10,000 years apart. This shows that Neanderthals returned to the site over time to make symbolic markings.
I believe that this art made by the Neanderthals will be also found in other caves around the world. This non-figurative art, which we have not paid attention to, may be precisely the oldest art in the world. So this place in Spain is one of the caves with the oldest art in the world.
Researchers say the pigments are yet another evidence that the intellectual capabilities of Neanderthals have been underestimated. Neanderthals went extinct about 40,000 years ago.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm your host, Muzaffar Haider. Here in the studio today, we have with us Sayyid Mahdi and Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So today we have a very interesting and intricate topic to be discussing, inshallah. To open up the discussion, I'd like to ask Sayyid Shahriar to shed some light on the JCPOA. And, you know, this is, the world does view it as between USA and Iran. Whose fault was it for leaving? I mean, I have a feeling which way this conversation is going to go, which direction it's going to take.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yeah, just a little bit of a background on this JCPOA. So this is a agreement that was done by multiple countries. It was not just the United States. So the countries involved, they're also called the P5+1, mm-hmm. right? So you have the United States, Britain, France, Russia, China. This is the P5. And then plus one is Germany. And, of course, the Islamic Republic of Iran. So this is a nuclear deal that took a couple of years to come to fruition. It was quite difficult. But all of the parties, they signed this JCPOA, which pretty much the crux of the matter was that sanctions will be lifted from the Islamic Republic of Iran in exchange for certain limitations upon their nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is the background. Of course, very quickly, anyways, so this JCPOA occurred during the Obama administration, which includes the current president, who was then vice president, Joseph Biden. These guys, they made the deal, right? And then when Donald Trump came in as the next president, he called it a lousy deal, and he left the deal, right, unilaterally, without the consent of any of the other partners, and which, of course, is you know, the United Kingdom and France and Germany and Russia and China. So this kind of shows you this kind of very one-sided mentality of the United States of America. Go it alone. We don't care about anybody else, even if you are our own friends. So, yes, United States of America was the country that decided to one-sided, unilaterally leave the JCPOA.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Sheikh Ali, what do you have to say about it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Well, as Sayyid beautifully summarized here, JCPOA is an agreement between the world's so-called superpowers and the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is definitely a regional power, to say the least, and inshallah on its way to becoming that superpower and have a very serious role in the entire world dynamics. So the idea was because of the fame and popularity of the Islamic Republic of Iran and its notions, its human-based principles, which they were and have been standing on, they tried to contain the Islamic Republic and its development and its progress. And what did they use to contain the Islamic Republic? It was this deal. It's called JCPOA, which is also known as Barjam in Farsi. And, you know, the purpose of this deal was to really contain the progress and development of the Islamic Republic of Iran when it comes to its nuclear enrichment program. Now, for our listeners, you know, one thing has to be very clear, that there are two things that need to be understood. One is nuclear enrichment, which is the right of every nation, and the other is nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the right of none
and
because of its collateral damage.
Right, and nuclear enrichment is the same as nuclear energy?
It's the nuclear energy, right?
Okay.
So you enrich uranium to get to a certain level where it converts into energy, which can be then used for the betterment of the society and the development of nations and countries. Now, this is a right of every nation to enrich uranium so they can fulfill their needs when it comes to energy.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to nuclear weapons, it's an entirely different ballgame. You enrich uranium to a point where you turn it into weapons, and these are the weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And who has it? Only a select few countries in the world have it.
Mm-hmm.
And who has used it? It's only the United States of America who
only
has used it.
Only one country that's used it.
Right? Mm. So this weapon program is an issue which, according to Islam, as the leader of the Islamic Republic and the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said, it is haram, it is forbidden to attain and to make and to possess and to use these weapons, Islamically speaking. So the Islamic Republic of Iran was never, is not, and will not be pursuing the nuclear weapons, which the West has it, right? Israel has it, right? Without signing the NPT even, right? Islamic Republic, in principle, is against this whole acquisition of these weapons because of the nature of these weapons and how they cause the collateral damage. And it, you know, you remember Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
So Islamic Republic is against acquiring those weapons, but Islamic Republic is adamant and is insistent, and rightly so, for the acquisition of nuclear energy,
right,
which is a right of every nation. So they want to contain Iran, contain its progress, contain its development, and hence they came up with this so-called deal, which is the JCPOA, so that nuclear program stops. And why do they not want Iran to acquire it? Just very quickly, last point.
Acquire nuclear energy.
Energy.
Mm.
Because they don't want to see an Islamic Iran, which is independent.
Mm.
They want dependency. The West wants dependency. And they want Iran to be subjugated to the West and look towards the West when it comes to fulfilling their own needs.
Yeah, if it's self-sufficient, then it no longer has any need for the West.
Exactly.
So,
well, it's, yeah, it's very interesting, this point that Sheikh Ali brought up about nuclear energy. Right. So in one of the recent speeches from the month of February, I think towards the end of February, the leader of the Islamic Ummah, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he has a very interesting point where he brings this up. So he says that at the current time, the West is buying barrel after barrel of oil at an incredibly cheap price. I mean, they're pretty much they're you know, bottled water is more expensive than the oil that is being sold to Western countries in today's time. Okay? And oil, I believe it was Henry Kissinger, he said that if you control the oil, you control the governments. So they're controlling the governments based upon Henry Kissinger's. He was Secretary of State in one of the United States government, very famous guy.
One of the think tanks.
Yeah, one of those very famous. And so he said if you control the oil, you control the governments. And so now we find that they are not only controlling the oil, but the governments at a very, very cheap price. So after this, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, right, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he says that, but if these countries, for example, France or Germany or the United States or the UK, if they were oil producers, they wouldn't even sell us this same oil bottle by bottle, right? So he's saying we're selling it to these guys barrel by barrel. And if it was them, the ones who were producing oil, they wouldn't even sell it to us bottle by bottle.
And they do it, right? Look at the technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are certain bans on technologies that, for instance, Iranians are not allowed to pursue.
Yeah.
Right? They do it.
Yeah.
This is the nature of the West. But yeah, it's a...
Yeah, bottle by bottle, right? And so then after that, he says, and this is the vision of this leader, a vision that you do not see in any other so-called Muslim governments or Muslim leaders in other parts of the Muslim world. He very clearly says, and this is from last month, February speech, he says that nuclear energy is the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not want us to be able to have our own nuclear energy, right? And he says, why? It's just like the oil. So what they want to do is to be able to control nuclear energy and then in the future, you know, charge us an arm and a leg for this very same nuclear energy that, as Sheikh Ali said, it should be free for all. It is the right for all nations. So a very interesting thing on nuclear energy.
There's really the dependence on the West, right? They don't want to see any nation to be independent, let alone the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is standing on human principles, right?
Right.
They don't want to see an Islamic Iran which is independent, and that's what it boils down to.
Inshallah, let's continue with this thought on dependency, because they want us to be economically dependent on America and the West. They want us to be dependent in other ways too, right?
Yeah, technologically dependent in terms of our food needs, in terms of the energy need, in terms of our well-being, you know, let it be vaccines right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing hard for us to just go and get their vaccines, what they are developing, no matter how flawed those vaccines are, no matter how untested those vaccines are. Why are they pushing for it?
Yeah.
Well, they're pushing simply not because they want to help any nation, let alone the nation of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They are pushing so the other nations are dependent on them. And this is one thing that Islam has taught us, right? Islam, even at a very individual level, at a very singleton level, Islam has pushed for independency, right? Islam doesn't want to see beggars on the street asking other people for their livelihood. Islam doesn't want to see these small little setups to be dependent on the bigger setups, right? Islam doesn't want to see these small countries, the third world countries, to be dependent on the so-called superpowers, right? Islam has taught us the lesson of integrity, dignity, independence, right? Self-sufficiency, depending on your own abilities, depending on your own resources, depending on your own people. You know, this is a message for the governments of the world, especially the governments of the third world countries, that you are expected and supposed to be independent. You have to be depending on your own strengths and your own people. And this is the message of the leader of the Islamic Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. One of the things that I see with Iran is, and it's really fascinating, how they believe in empowering other nations. See, when West comes to help any nation, their model is to make them dependent, more dependent and more dependent, right?
Yes, yes.
So they're like, you know, completely controlled, manipulated, and their resources are looted and used. But when it comes to the Islamic Republic helping other nations, it is beautiful, right? They try to empower that nation.
Yeah.
You have seen it in case of Syria. You have seen it in case of Iraq. You have seen it in case of Yemen. You are seeing it as a matter of fact, right? Palestine, for instance, right? It's not that Iran sent, like, all of these military men and, you know, fighter jets and everything to Palestine. No, they said, you are going to determine your own fate, right? You have to stand tall on your feet against the oppressors and aggressors. And yes, we will help if you want to stand up, right? Yeah. This is empowerment, right? This is way different than, you know, looking at another nation as if, oh, now they're stuck. So let's just abuse them, misuse them, and, you know, control them.
You know, it's funny that you, it's really interesting, actually, that you mentioned dependency even when it comes to food, because America, one of their plans is to control world food, isn't it, through these big corporations. There's actually a hadith that I heard just yesterday from Imam Sadiq. He said that one who worries about his sustenance has actually sinned. It's a form of sinning to worry about your sustenance of today or tomorrow, right? And it just goes to show you that Islam really does want people to be independent, because it's through fear that they actually control people. It's through fear that you won't be able to provide for yourself, fear that you won't be able to produce your own energy, your own food. I don't know if you've heard, Sayed, about Henry Kissinger's 1974 plan?
No, go ahead.
There was a classified 200-page study in which the study falsely claimed that population growth in so-called lesser developed countries was a grave threat to U.S. national security.
Right.
So since then, they've been plotting to actually stop the growth, the population growth in other countries. And food has a major role to play with it.
Yeah, I don't know if you, I don't think we have too much time on the program, but if our listeners, they do a little bit of research on, for example, companies such as Monsanto and genetically modified seeds, seeds that can only be bought by companies, and there are seeds that do not reproduce other plants, a very interesting thing to research. But one thing that I think is important is this cultural dependency as well that the West is trying to create all over the world, where it is their culture that needs to be implemented across the globe, whether it's their music or it's their ethics, their morality, their philosophies, their everything. Also a very dangerous thing, cultural dependency upon the West.
Yeah. They wish for other countries, especially Iran, to be dependent on them in various different ways. Nuclear energy is one of them. Food is one of them. Just very quickly, America actually adopted as official policy in November 1975 by President Gerald Ford this food control, this population control. It outlined a covert plan to reduce population growth in those countries through birth control and also implicitly war and famine. That's all we have time for today. Inshallah, next time we're going to be talking about the JCPOA more and delving deeper into the psyche behind this whole phenomenon. From myself, from Sayed Mahdi, and from Sheikh Ali, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is Viewpoints coming to you from IRIB English Radio.
You're the reason my life's worth living. You're the reason I'm alive. I'd be lost without you. You're the reason that I strive. You're my destiny. You're my revenue.
IRIB English Radio.